Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
It's a pleasure to be with you today. My name is Dr. Danielle LaRocca-Rina, and I am a member of the Child Advisory Council of Career Physicians. Today, we are discussing the topic of family and partner considerations during recruitment of academic faculty. What we'd like to do is to have our panelists really take a look at some of the aspects of recruiting faculty with the aim, of course, of retention. Today, we have Bruder Stapleton, John Haynes, Valerie Opopari, Bruce Rubin, Arnie Strauss, Wesley Milliken, and Peggy Troy has joined us as well. So let's begin in this conversation. What is your experience in recruitment of academic couples? And where I'd like to focus is the following. Let's say you have recruitment of a top neurosurgeon, but the other department you don't control. From the literature, there seem to be some differences in surgical recruitments versus others. There may not be a lot, but I thought we would get a diverse opinion on that. How do you manage that relationship when you're trying to do dual recruitments and what your guidance is? And Peggy, why don't I have you start?
Thank you, Danielle. And I think that's where you really get into some difficulties is when it's not within the Department of Pediatrics, right? And you want to go to surgery, you want to go to neurosurgery, wherever it happens to be. You know, the first thing I'm going to say is I think it's really helpful to have a policy because I think so many of us haven't been guided by a policy. So every time you try to do this, it's a new experience. Now every experience is different. But I think if the dean and the department chairs have common ideas about what it takes to recruit a dual academic family, you're going to have a much easier conversation going to like neurosurgery if you're trying to hire a developmental pediatrician or something like that. So to me, I would say encourage institutions to have some sort of a framework or a policy in these situations, because particularly when you're recruiting women, Danielle, the literature you sent out, the numbers are going up in terms of the numbers of dual academic families. And then you get into all the issues of tenure track and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, it's down to negotiation. A lot of this falls apart at the financing. There may be a position, but the money's not right. And so how do you then array the necessary dollars for a period of time where you have an opportunity to bring somebody on board in a department that may be a little bit more constrained fiscally and not have the resources to go ahead? But to me, it's really understanding the family, knowing what the needs are, because about the time you're trying to go to another department to negotiate, don't leave anything out. Lay it all out there so that at least that department chair, the dean, whoever, has a context of what is really important to that recruitment and how they can facilitate that. So to me, a policy and then guidance in how you go about it would be really important.
The reason I wanted both Bob and Arnie to comment was, as you pointed out, Maggie, in the literature, I'll give you this bit of data that among surgery faculty, 40% of women had an academic partner, which was higher.
It varies considerably by specialty. As I think Peggy mentioned, you know, if it's a developmental pediatrician and they're seemingly very difficult to come by, sometimes it's easier to move your colleague department and just emphasize how rare this opportunity is. My experience has been that recruiting partners or spouses in the same department has been much easier than when the partner or spouse is in a different department. And, you know, the only thing I can add, it's probably seems trite, but I think this is another reminder of how important it is as department leaders to have strong relationships with your colleagues in other departments and in the community. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the opportunities that I've found for partners or spouses have not been in the school of medicine, but have been in community practice. And those have been facilitated because of the relationships that we have with the surgical community in our town. So it's just a reminder that, as a department chief, we have to cultivate relationships. And I think Valerie has mentioned in the past, having gone to some extraordinary lengths to get people positions in other schools, school of public health or school of engineering or whatever. And so it just is a reminder that, we need to always have our antennae up for the relationships with other departments and other specialties. I mean, we've had some success in recruiting spouses and some with Bruder where, one of the spouses was in pediatrics and one was in surgery. And I really do think that the relationship that Bruder and I had was essential in that.
I would just emphasize a couple of aspects. First, early investigation into the dual recruitment, the spouse partner is critical before the first visit, I would say. Second, I would emphasize the need to make sure that there's permission to do that from both of the individuals involved in the recruitment. But I think in my experience, that is almost always allowed and therefore becomes much less of a particularly important legal issue. But there are other members of the family, and I recall vividly two recruitments in which finding the right spot for one of the children is what resulted in the recruitment. And that may be a school, it may be a special interest, hobby interest, sports interests, or it may be a religious point of view. So it's the whole family, and it takes time and listening, as has been emphasized, to discover those issues early. The last point I would make is we always tried to make the dual recruitments equal, not a trailing spouse, equal. And again, I recall at least two instances in which we ended up with a star who was the so-called trailing spouse. And so it's really, really important to recognize that it is a dual recruitment, but that they need to be handled as if they were somewhat separate in the sense of making sure that equal attention is paid to the itinerary, to the social program, and to the details of each individual's needs in terms of professional needs in terms of the recruitment. So equal as much as possible, and certainly much more attention than is often given to a partner. And that is a lesson that it took me a long time to learn. And it's not a gender issue, it's an equality issue. So it's really, really important. Start early. Make sure you have permission and treat people the way you would like your spouse or your partner to be treated.
Make one comment in my own experience, which was the independence of the other department in making the assessment of whether or not that other recruitment is actually appropriate. So that's a, I have found that that's a challenging piece.
Daniel, I just wanted to follow up quickly on what Arnie shared, just with an additional point, and then I'll defer to Valerie and Bruder to finish up on this question. But it's generally unintentionally by a search committee or an institution, but a spouse that is a stay-at-home parent views that as being highly professional. It's just different than being a neurosurgeon or an engineer or a lawyer. And you can mess it up by not treating them as such. And so I just think it's something that can often happen where you hear that this person isn't employed and you go, oh, great. We don't have to talk to the chair of surgery or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, it could be actually more important that you put together an itinerary for them to look at schools and, all the things that are important to their family and treat them like a professional because they may actually be a triple boarded nuclear engineer who happened just to choose to stay home with their kids, right? And so you just have to be careful not to relax at the wrong time.
That's kind of a critical point. And, you know, I hesitated even reporting out from Giroud's article because they had the statistics that nearly 15% partnered with this stay at home. But that term sort of probably didn't sit well with me. So thank you so much for that comment, Valerie.
I had a recruitment once who was a stay-at-home mother, but she had spent her time in the 3 years preceding the recruitment to gain some additional academic credentialing in horticulture and botanical gardening kind of things. And she had been offered a volunteer position at a botanical gardens where they resided at the time of the recruitment. And when I heard that, I thought, oh, great, we have a botanical gardens here. I'll look and see if there's any volunteer positions. And I did. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, wait a minute. My guess is that her goal with the kids getting into higher levels of education, she might really want to be employed. So I asked the director of the botanical gardens, could you envision a part-time paid position that might start out as, you know, a volunteer thing, but could eventually. And he said, yeah, I could think about anything that would help the botanical gardens. So we brought her through and she had a full recruitment, all with people from the various offices that were part of the botanical gardens. And they loved her and they loved her training. And the position was eventually turned into a full-time job, which she had.
Thank you. That's an incredible sort of example. You know, one thing that comes out, and I'm saying this so that I don't lose the thread, is that in all of your comments thus far, it is caring about the individuals in the family that you're recruiting. If that's not present, then the outcome is what I'm hearing from all of you will not be good. Because at the end of the day, you want to serve the community through the health professions, et cetera. But you really want to also welcome a whole family, and you know, however they're constituted in that.
I'd like to just make 2 points. One, to expand on Arnie's great comments. When we're talking about family, it's not just the partner spouse, it's the kids, and it's also the parents, understanding whether there's elder care involved. And when, particularly around children, when children have special musical or athletic talents, to when they come, recruit them. We've talked about not to recruit them in a negative way, but to make them aware of what the opportunities might be for them if they were to come as a family. Because I found that almost as challenging as a partner or spouse. And then about the parents of the applicant, if they indicate that is an important issue, not to give up necessarily, but to explore that, to see whether sometimes the parents say, gosh, you know, I'd rather come to your, I think it's a great idea if you move there. I'd like to live there. So not to give up, but to follow it. And one final comment. We're talking about external recruits, but internal recruits and retention are also very important. Yeah. Frequently, when you know you hear about one of your outstanding faculty are being recruited and you're trying to develop a retention package, thinking about their family and are there things you can do for them that would enhance their willingness to stay is also, because oftentimes the other department that's being recruited hasn't really paid attention to the family. And you can find ways of helping your own faculty and not lose valued faculty colleague.
Working with other departments monetarily can make a difference. At least two recruits that I was successful with were simply because we supplemented another department or even another school to help them recruit the spouse or family. And the second point I would make is, we haven't mentioned it, but when some other department chair calls you about a joint recruit, you damn well better listen, because it's gonna come around to you. And you're gonna need that in the future. So be careful about rejecting out of hand requests otherwise. Frequently, you can find the right position or an appropriate space for that person. And again, I know that at least several instances in my recruitments, that was the key difference.
Yeah, I'd like to talk just for a minute about the whole notion of children. And the one area that I'd like to mention is childcare. You know, a lot of our faculty are young, may not have kids, but may be planning to have kids. You can wait 18 months to get in an adequate childcare situation. So I think that a focus, not necessarily for the individual department, but for the university to understand the importance of childcare, good childcare. You know, in some cases, in fact, the place my daughter went, they had adequate childcare, but it didn't open until 8 in the morning. Now, you know, if you've got dual family careers, 8 in the morning isn't a very particularly great time to start. And maybe the area can't provide childcare itself, but just even knowing where to get safe, adequate childcare can be a really important factor, because many of our faculty are leaving maybe their support system of their family members and things like that, where they don't have the resources, they're new to the community, and really need to have the support and help. Because I will tell you from my own personal experience, if your kids aren't happy, you're not going to be particularly effective in your job. You've got to really have them in safe, adequate places. So I think that's an important factor that often is overlooked. And it's not just for the females. Many times the males are the people that are looking for the childcare opportunity as well.
Thanks. You know, it's so nice because as we discussed, it's obviously complicated to recruit a family because you influence the lives of so many individuals.
One needs to be creative in solving issues, and policies are critical, but you need to be flexible because each family is different and each recruit is different and the cultural issues may be very different. We haven't talked about recruiting international faculty, but sometimes that's really critical as well. So being flexible, I think, is really crucial.
Arnie, I thank you so much. You're always so thoughtful in your comments. And I had one thought, which we haven't touched yet, is the extent to which the demographics of the community, the cultural aspects, actually play into the decision. So thank you again for alerting us to that.
Demographics and the interests of the community can be critical for the family. We've mentioned briefly religious, other interests. We have, within the department, had developed packages related to not only the different religious and other communities, LGBTQ communities from abroad that are supportive, and often have identified people involved or leaders who are willing to meet and discuss with the candidates if they're so interested. You can't bring that up, but you can make it clear to the candidate that if they have specific interests, and you can give them some rough ideas, groups of interest, LGBTQ, any of that that would be important for your family, I would be happy to provide you with information and perhaps even let you or a member of your family of interest meet with somebody who'd be willing to discuss that with them, either directly or remotely. So I can't emphasize what Arnie said enough, that again, recruiting the family is recruiting them into an environment where they're going to be comfortable.
I see John and Peggy on here, and I think the one thing before we close, would love to have them comment on departments and the interface with their hospital CEO partners as it relates to funding a lot of these co-recruits, because it's oftentimes not the department that has the money, honestly, to make these things work. John and Peggy, if you have any comments, I think they would really add value to this.
One thing I'll add is that you need to work also with your hospital partner. I mean, I can a number of times that the hospital, myself, have really added to the funding pool. Because in these critical recruits, departments that are constrained in their funding, you don't want to really not have a success. And so giving a 2 or 3 year runway, I think, can really help you cross the finish line with a very successful candidate. So it's important the CEO has a good relationship with the department chairs, even though in many cases, most of them are going to be on the adult side. Being able to pick up the phone and say, how can we make this a win-win? How can we negotiate this successfully so that we can get the best and the brightest to come to our institution? So I think, at least in my case, the CEO can play a very pivotal role in finishing a successful recruitment.
Yeah, I agree with Peggy in those comments. I think those are very wise. But to Wesley's point, I was curious when the hospital was going to be direct into the conversation, because I do think it's important. The hospital does play a key role in all of this. And I was going to mention that at the end, that there is a clear opportunity for the hospital to intercede with both departments, with the candidates, you know, with the family, and help facilitate a successful recruitment. So I don't think the hospital should ever be overlooked from that standpoint. If alignment on mission, vision, and what's going on is there, then the hospital certainly plays a key role in that.
Just add one more comment. You know, when Valerie shared the opportunity that she faced with horticultural interests, the hospitals also have really good relationships in communities, yeah, with schools and churches, yeah, and a myriad of resources. And picking up the phone and making a phone call for a successful recruit, I think, is an obligation on the part of the leadership hospital organization, because we're all trying to do what's best for kids.
Peggy brings up the community again, and it occurred to me that the value that the community plays in this can't be understated, yeah, because I think there are a lot of opportunities to draw the community, members of the community, closer to the academic institution, to the hospital, to the programs that the hospital has. And I think, you know, the closer they get, there's development opportunities, potentially philanthropic opportunities. And so I think engaging the community is vitally important as well.
We have much more to discuss about this, so maybe in consideration, we could look at areas that perhaps we could delve more deeply. But I wanted to summarize, first of all, to thank you. We care about the process, that it's a good process, because, first of all, we haven't said this, but we are here to serve, right? As health professionals, we are here to serve, to care about the people that we recruit, their families, their communities, their integration, and the authenticity of that recruitment process is really great. Confidentiality was mentioned, flexibility, understanding that this takes a while, so keeping in touch when monitoring how things change. Pointing out that policies are important, so that whether it is orientation of the interview, the initial interviewing engagement of that individual, different departments, and we didn't talk about it, and the dean's office obviously may be involved. And in my situation, where I was a president of a health science university, the university was involved in also promoting those relationships that lead to successful recruitment, retention, and need I say, happiness. Okay. I love the conversation about children and childcare, and families are complex, and elder care. Maybe I'll end there, that we care about collaboration, academic hospital affiliations, and equal recruitment and respect for the process. So I think I'll pause there and really thank you. And for those who are listening in, please go to our website. We have a number of resources here, and hope you will join us for the next conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30-plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com.